Right. In fact, let me just remind everyone that we did agree to that possible division of functions. The RFP now reads, your organization is free to make a proposal only for items 1 and 2, or alternatively for items 3 through 17, or both, if you so desire. And 1 and 2 is to appoint and supervise an NES and the LESs to do all of those tasks, and 2 is to coordinate and supervise forums and monitor and enforce fair campaign provisions and process complaints. So we did earlier discuss that that's a bifurcation that we felt comfortable, or that we might feel comfortable with, depending on, you know, the specific bidders. So, I mean, that's already out there in the world.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Do you have a sense of how much money is for each section, and how much money would be saved if it were segmented?
Well, I'll just say my opinion on this, and others can chime in. I don't think that we came up with the idea of division of functions in order to save money, but rather that some organizations might be more, that they're really two very different types of functions and different types of skill sets. And so some organizations just may not feel like they want to take on, for instance, if they're really expert at the software and the, counting up the ballots and all of those technical things, they may not want to get into, or they may not have experience getting into, processing complaints and supervising a candidate forum. It's really two very different things. So we just wanted to offer the option to those that are strong in one area but not in another to do part of it. So I don't think there was a sense that that would save any money per se. But you do raise a good point about the overall dollar amount that the offer will be, and that is that we have to have some guideline for what we think is reasonable or unreasonable based on past expenses. So we've gathered some of the expenses from last year, but I think there were some gaps there, and maybe we could ask somebody, maybe somebody would volunteer to contact the CFO to try to get the fullest accounting we can of all the expenses from last year, that then gives us a somewhat of a guideline as we're evaluating the new bids. Is there any?
Did we ask for that a few months ago?
Yeah, and we got some of it, but I think there were some missing pieces that were not available at the time, so I think we just dropped the ball on following up. So if there's somebody who would volunteer to follow up, that would be helpful. Well, I'll tell you what, if no one else is going to do it, I can take that on. I'll try to get whatever categories of costs we haven't yet gotten and try to get the most comprehensive summary of last year's expenses. And of course, this is not going to include litigation, because what we're trying to do, well, first of all, we're trying to prevent any litigation, but second of all, we're just looking at the comparable costs to the firm that's going to be bidding. Basically, I would say we would all agree it shouldn't be a penny more than last year, and it really should be considerably less.
A lot less.
Than last year. Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else on this piece that we've been discussing about going to other organizations? We touched on the question of seeking volunteers for pieces of this, and the
Bob, just for a minute, you're at time.
Okay, just to finish the thought, that one corporation told us that, I believe someone just said tonight, that they don't feel comfortable using volunteers. Do we want to take a position on that as kind of, do we want to direct that be part of it as a way to guarantee that costs are lower, or is that just going to torpedo the chance of some of the vendors participating? I mean, it does seem like we have this immense pool of volunteers who have been very helpful in different pieces of the election process the past 4 years. And, at a minimum, wouldn't it seem that we should strongly, when we get back to each of the bidders, if we're interested in them, shouldn't we at least kind of strongly recommend that they consider using our pool of volunteers for certain pieces of the process? as a way of cutting costs?
Bonnie DeStack.
Yeah.
I am dead set against it. Other than, let's see, what could I imagine volunteers doing? I could imagine volunteers helping to set up outside forums. I could not imagine volunteers touching ballots, having anything to do with the counting of the ballots, having anything, frankly, to do with the printing of the campaign pamphlets, or interfacing with any of the things that have to happen through the stations.
Can you say why?
Because I think that it's lunacy. Because I think it's where you lose accountability. I think that this is all too complex and too fraught with contention to begin with, and that you are asking to have people understandably sometimes do this with partisan views. And I just am one that actually believes in often trying to pay people for work like this.
Yosh for
Anthony.
Okay, Yosh and then Anthony.
Yes, my position is not quite as strong and adamant as Bonnie's, but I do concur with her ultimate conclusion. I think it's wrong to insist that the vendor incorporate our volunteers. And who's going to say that a volunteer is qualified or not qualified? I think this opens up a whole can of worms. And also, it starts to infringe on the independent contractor status when you start imposing these kinds of conditions. Thank you.
Anthony?
Yeah, the thing that concerns me is that word accountability, because how is the vendor to stand behind their work if some of the work is being done by people who are not themselves accountable to the management of the vendor? Unless it's, you know, the very, very simplest and foolproof tasks, but I don't know. In you know, something like an election, I don't know I don't know if there's anything that someone might not be suspicious of that was being done by people who weren't under the employ of the contractor. Like, obviously, you know, opening envelopes is simple, but you know, if I were the contractor, I might say, well, do I want people I know nothing about doing this, and then how can I certify the product that the service that I've connected for Pacifica? So it does seem a little worrisome, yeah.
Well, if I can just call myself.
Sorry, should we extend time?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. Yes, we are past time on this, so... let's see here. We have a total of about 9-10 proposals on our list for cost cutting. My feeling is that this is a really important thing given the financial crisis. So I would like to propose that another 20 minutes to go through these other proposals. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, 20 minutes more on this item. So, just to call myself on this issue, I certainly appreciate the concerns everyone has about doing this, but my recollection in most, if not all, the elections, and all I know about, of course, is WBAI, but I thought I had heard there was similar practice at some of the other stations, is that the ballot counting actually was a combination of paid and unpaid people, and it was under very close supervision of the local election supervisor. So, you know, if someone wasn't properly, I mean, he did the training, he or she, he did the training at the start of the process. If anyone was either not doing it properly or was doing anything inappropriate, then then they were, you know, either they were corrected or they were removed. So, I mean, I don't see how a contractor would have less authority than that to just say, look, if this person is not doing it, then they're out. But to offer this, to me, this is a recipe for ballooning costs rather than cutting costs. If for a year, I mean, people should chime in from what they what has been the practice at the other four stations. But I thought this was an actual way where money was saved by not having to hire. I mean, this is a huge amount of clerical work for, you know, that takes many, many hours to go through, open every envelope, put it through whatever they agreed, you know, whatever the software is for reading, reading the ballots to, you know, verify them. I mean, it's a physical labor process. And since we have volunteers, and it was always specified they absolutely could not be a candidate, of course. I don't see, and I do agree, I think people are correct that you absolutely couldn't make it a requirement. But I think you could, you know, you could use it as a negotiating point if they say, well, part of why it's going to cost us, you know, whatever, $250,000 is we're going to have to hire at least 10 people at each of the five stations on the day of the election, on the day of the vote count. And we could come back to them and say, well, look, you know, if we have this pool of volunteers, you know, we're not going to require that you use them, but we're not going to pay you more than X. You know, we give them a lower fee and negotiate with them in that way. So let's hear. I want to hear some response to that idea.
Yeah, Anthony here.
Yeah.
I would assume that, you know, these organizations will have done, at least some of them will have done elections for considerably larger, you know, organizations than ours. They are large unions, so they may have automated most of the process. You know, they may, you know, the envelopes may be, whereas we had, you know, volunteers sitting around a table and opening them, and supervisors saying what to do with a damaged ballot or questions like that. This may all be automated in the shops of the potential contractors, so it may not be as time and labor intensive as it might seem to us, you know, given the way we've seen it done in the past.
Yosh Verstack,
go ahead.
Let me suggest a compromise position, something such as clerical volunteers will be provided by the station or the LSB upon request.
Well, what do people think of that?
This is Bonnie.
Yeah, Bonnie.
The experience at KPFA, and I have, I think, gone to witness all of the elections, is that it has been quite messy and in some ways a little bit unpleasant. People get tired. I don't believe since the first year or the second year that they have ever gotten through the KPFA ballots in less than ending up having stayed up all night and ended up having to move out of the place that we do the ballot counting because they need their offices back, and ending up doing the tallying at the station with people that have been up for 36 hours. It's a mess, guys. It's not the way to really do it in a pleasant and official fashion, as far as I'm concerned. I guess you could talk to the people that we hope will come in on these RFPs and see what their thoughts on it were. I think that it would be good to hear what they have to say, and as Yosh is saying, they might be, or Anthony, I'm not sure who said it, they might be really far more experienced in this than we're thinking, and their process may not be as twisted around as at least the ones at KPFA have ended up being, with broken scanners and people that were just simply too tired to be really supervising anything. So I guess I would go that far, but I don't, other than simple kind of outreach things like helping to set up you know, locations where we might be trying to do outside forums around the elections. I really am standing, unfortunately, kind of on my thought that volunteers might not make sense.
Do you see your stack?
Go ahead.
I absolutely agree with Bonnie. I think that to impose volunteers is to be penny wise and pound foolish, and it's going to wind up, especially since there's so little trust in this organization. The counting of ballots is a very sensitive issue, and it's better to pay for more hours than it is to pay for more lawyers.
Hey, that's almost a quotable line.
Bill.
Yeah, Bill and then myself. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, that was just about what I was going to say. I think it's the way we're going to save money is by reducing reasons for lawsuits. And so we need to make sure this is done confidently and professionally. That's all.
Okay, well, you know, I'll drop this, but I would just note that not a single lawsuit has ever been filed based on the counting process. And yes, there have been disputes, it's gotten angry, but you know what? There's going to be disputes whether they're paid or unpaid, because there's always observers from the different slates or the different candidates, and they always argue over whether a certain ballot is being interpreted properly. And that has nothing to do with who the person is that's physically opening an envelope. That the disputes are, you know, are, those disputes will go on in any case, but none of those disputes, even as, you know, intense as they have been, has ever led to a lawsuit. The lawsuit has had to do more with the question of the voter list, which is a much earlier part of the process. That list was defective, someone didn't get a replacement ballot, all of that kind of thing, which absolutely has to be handled by paid people. That's I'm not even remotely suggesting any of that could be given to volunteers. So just something to keep in mind. But we can move on for now, and let's go to... So just to be clear on the last point under the first section, where Bill and I had suggested see if unbundling services yields a lower overall cost and see whether community members with appropriate skill sets such as layout could do the work for free or below market. Are we saying that's just not compatible with having a contractor? That let's say if we got a volunteer at Station A, Station X, to design the ballot pamphlet under the supervision of the contractor, that we don't want to go down that road because it just is too problematic to have an unpaid person do that?
Oh, Carolyn.
Yep. Anthony here.
Carolyn, then Anthony.
Yeah, I think really you're dealing with a philosophical question, whether people are committed to the ideal of volunteers at a station like Pacifica. Les Radke clearly was, and he was able to work with volunteers and work with them to some extent. Election Services Corporation was very clear they did not want to be bothered with volunteers' time with money. They felt it would take too much of their paid professional time to train and work with volunteers, and you know, that's a valid position. So I think really it will depend on what we want, whom we hire. If we agree that it's important for Pacifica to incorporate the culture of volunteerism into everything we do, then we'll hire the kind of vendor who agrees with that. If we want to professionalize it and make it efficient and economical, then we'll hire that kind of vendor, and they will hire temp workers at $8 or $10 or $12 an hour and get it done quickly and efficiently. I know some of the problems that some supervisors have run into with volunteers could have been avoided, but maybe not, and maybe it's worth it if we believe it's worth it. But it really is a question of philosophy. What do we believe as an organization? You know, do we want to take the time and the trouble to train volunteers and incorporate them and make them feel part of the system, even though it might cost us a little bit of extra time and money? I think that's just one of those questions we're going to have to face. And we probably, it's all theoretical until we get a vendor putting in a request, you know, and then we'll have to see, you know, if we want to work with him, whether or not he believes what we believe, whatever it is we believe at that moment. So I think maybe we're just spinning our wheels a bit, if I may.
Okay, Anthony?
Yeah, I guess this is just reiterating what I and others said before, but I don't think we want to tell a vendor that they have to have volunteers involved in any way in the mailing or processing of ballots. I mean, there may be maybe other tasks that can be split out, but not anything that could be eventually question the validity of the outcome of the election.
Okay. Well, I think we can move on from this. Let me just point out that one thing this reminds me of is the need to interview every bidder, and that's a task that I guess the working group should do with notice to the committee, so anyone who wants to, we may have to get advice from counsel on whether we need to do this confidentially or not, but in any case, we can deal with that later, but certainly every committee member should be present, should be have the right to be present on the night that we interview each bidder. And would anyone object to just making one of the questions, just as a question that we ask each bidder, is what is your philosophy about incorporating volunteers in your process as a way of cutting costs? Is there any objection to just asking that as a question?
No, not at all. Waiting okay. 2 weeks for an answer might be objectionable, but no objection to asking.
Okay. So so just remember everyone who's on this working group that we have to schedule interviews for each bidder. Okay, let's go on down the list. The next category, so we haven't agreed to anything in the first category. So now the next category is called reduce printing and mailing costs. First item says verify voter addresses before election to reduce the need for to mail replacement ballots. Now we dealt with this earlier with the motion we passed on cleaning mailing lists, and while it was going to be the next agenda item, since we're here now and, you know, let's just get it out of the way. We passed this in November. It was supposed to be passed along to the PNB. Apparently there was some miscommunication, but before we got on the stream, was it Bonnie? You agreed to forward that motion we passed to Sherry and make sure that at the earliest possible teleconference, she puts it on the agenda for action by the board. Is that correct, Bonnie?
I have a question about it.
Yes.
The stuff that I'm supposed to pass along, you sent earlier about an hour ago, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Hold on, stuck it in a folder. Hold on, I got to open this folder for a second. Because I...
Yeah, I sent it to the whole committee. It's just
okay,
the
so
motions
is it
on...
the whole thing, is it part one, part two, and part three?
Well, it's a three-part motion, but it's all
okay.
One piece.
It is that one piece.
Yes.
Okay.
This is just for those who don't have access at the moment. It's the motions on cleaning Pacifica's mailing list that this committee adopted on November 10th, and we're just asking the PNB to adopt these and implement them as soon as possible at all five stations.
So I am really sending this to Sherry to ask her to put it on the agenda, but
right.
Shouldn't I also be sending this out to the whole PNB at the same time?
Sure.
Point of information?
Not sure.
Yes.
Bob, if you're writing a report, which I gathered from the...
No, I'm not.
You're
and
not.
Never, and never have. And always, contrary to, or in answer to your question online, I would... always get input from this committee before I ever to write any report as
chair
pro tem.
Well, aren't you supposed to do a report every quarterly meeting?
No one has ever asked me to do that.
No. It's just that the chairs usually do. I mean, I always did.
No chair has asked me to do that.
Not the chair. The secretary used to. Well, never mind. If you're not going to, but generally the motions that this committee or any committee passes are included in the quarterly reports to the PNB. And then they're either accepted or debated. So there's no need to send them as we pass them one by one, as Bonnie is being asked to do. They would just
well, there absolutely is a need because there's an urgent time urgency. We can't wait till the next quarter to get
it's
these things passed by
now.
The PMB.
The quarterly meeting is in 2 weeks. So if you're going to do a little report, which could consist just of sending up the motions of staff and ask the PNB to accept them as they are, that would settle that. We could do them all at once.
Okay. And, does anyone here object to asking Bonnie on behalf of this committee to pass a motion, to forward a motion that we already passed 2 months ago to the PNB and request that they agendize it quickly? Now, if they can't, that's understandable. They have a lot on their plate. Perhaps they won't get to it till the in-person meeting at the end of the month. But if they can, I think we all agree this is a fairly urgent matter about cleaning up the list. And
also non-controversial.
Right, and non-controversial. So does anyone object to us, to Bonnie simply asking the PNB chair if she could agendize it? If she can't, she can't.
Well, I do in the sense that the usual protocol is for committees to report to the PNB at the quarterly meetings and include the motions that they pass, and then they're just presented to the PNB, which accepts the report, and thus the motions. If they don't want to accept the motions, they can debate them at that point, but usually they're batched and sent up all at once. I don't know why we can't do that.
Bonnie, just ask.
Just as fast.
Bonnie, go ahead.
Well, you know, just a few weeks ago, we sent forward the motion about the amended language to the 2005 motion from the election committee about staff lists. With the thought as to what this first PNB meeting this year is going to be like, as we not only have to go through all of the mechanics of electing officers and committee members, but we're also facing an extraordinary financial crisis and pressure. I don't see why I wouldn't send this. What I'm typing right now is an email that I was about to send to Sherry, the PNB. It says, could you please put the following motion on the agenda for the next PNB meeting? These were already adopted by the PNB Elections Committee on November 10th, 2008, and then I have listed the motion. Is that fine?
Yeah, I'm going to ask again, is there any objection other than Carolyn to Bonnie sending that note to the chair and to the full board? Okay, hearing none, then that's accepted, so go ahead, Bonnie, and send that. Okay, let's move on. So we've done...
To the election committee?
I'm sorry?
Should I send it also to the Yahoo election committee?
Sure, CCS. So. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so now back to cost-cutting. So, all right, we dealt with verify voter addresses before election. That's really that motion. We'll deal with that. The next item says update listener and staff lists well in advance of election. We've had a lot of discussion about that. I think that's covered by, you know, the motion we just talked about and the earlier motion about unpaid staff lists. Unless there's anything anyone wants to add as to how to update listener and staff lists well in advance of election. Okay, let's go on. We have a lot on the list here. Don't use first-class mail for the initial ballot mailing. First-class mail should not be necessary now that a bylaws amendment has expanded the election timeline. And just for those who don't recall, it's now a 6-week turnaround rather than a 4-week in the old system, in the old bylaws. So this is a reference to the fact that on the official books of PNB resolutions, there is a standing resolution requiring that ballots be sent by first-class mail, and that was not practiced
last
time.
Yeah.
What Bill and I are recommending is that this actually be formally revoked by the PNB so that it does not impose a large added cost on the process. So why don't we talk about that now for a few minutes? Who would like to address it?
Well, this is Steve Brown. I think it was all set out in discussion we had several months ago that culminated in the research I incorporated into an email I sent. There is no advantage any longer in using first-class mail, where we can mail nonprofit standard class mail for like 8¼ cents or 8½ cents instead of a multiple of that. It just doesn't make sense. That also seems non-controversial to me.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, and one other reason why it's urgent is that if we're going to be evaluating these proposals from the vendors, we need to know right away if it's okay with the B&B for us to, you know, which way they can use for mailing, because that's going to go into their costs for their bid.
Right. Very good point. Anyone else?
Oh, Anthony?
Yes.
A question for Steve, who seems to be our resident expert on the Postal Service.
The one-eyed man in the land of the blind.
What's the, if we use other than first class mail, what's the absolute worst case for the time that elapsed between mailing and arrival?
Well, even in first class mail, if you ask for the absolute worst case, you know, you can have 10 years. But generally, the mail is handled in the same way. It's just the post office guarantees 1 or 2 days delivery with first class mail, and 3 to 5 with standard class mail. But by and large, they all arrive at the same time. If there's a question of priority, let's say it's in the middle of Christmas rush and there's first class mail versus standard, there may be a day or two difference. But as Bob pointed out, even so, with the expanded time frame, it's not going to make any difference. And it's not as it used to be with third class mail years ago, that the mail was handled differently and therefore the accuracy of delivery was less. That doesn't apply anymore.
Okay, actually, I need to correct myself. The motion on rescinding the earlier PNB motion requiring first class was actually part of the motion that we passed on November 10th that we were just discussing
right.
A few minutes ago. So that's already, we've forwarded that officially. That's our position. We're asking the PNB to adopt it. So it's yet another example of the urgency of them acting before the in-person meeting so that by the time we're in the first week in February. Well, it's true. They could do it if they're in person, but it would just be helpful for us to know ASAP whether they agree with us. So then, we can. In fact, actually, what would be good? If they could do this at a teleconference in the next week or two, then we could send a follow-up note to every RFP, to every, place that we sent the earlier notice saying, we just wanted to alert you that one cost that that you should count on at a lower level is that Steve, what's the class called? It would be BR. No,
it's standard class. It's nonprofit.
Standard class, right?
I believe okay. I late at night and I'm sick.
Oh, you're right. I see it here. I'm sorry. It's in the motion that standard class mail be used for future elections instead
non-profit
of first class.
Rate.
Right. So
one more thing.
Go ahead.
I wonder if I can suggest if there's a possibility that we could henceforth send our motions, our decisions to the PNB as a negative option and state that this is the motion we recommend that you pass, and unless you tell us that you're not going to do it, the foundation shall proceed on the basis that it's accepted.
No.
So that when we have non-controversial motions like list cleaning or using standard class mail, if the PNB has an objection, they can stop it within a certain amount of time. But if not, it's crazy that these things just languish because they don't seem to have the urgency of a 9/11 crisis that will come up at a PNB meeting and eat up all the available time. And then
let me point out, if I can interrupt, because you're basing it on an inaccurate premise. This did not languish. Okay, there was an accidental lack of forwarding this to the PNB by our secretary. Not his fault, but it just happened. Okay, so that's why they haven't acted on it, because they didn't know it existed. All right, it has nothing to do with their lack of urgency. They passed the earlier motion as soon as it was presented to them, the one about unpaid staff list. So I don't think we need to get into that tonight. This thing, I'm sure they'll act as quickly as they can once it's brought to their attention, with Bonnie's email. So I'd like if we can move back to the proposals. Now that this one's already been dealt with, let's go on to the next one.
Bob, I'd love to go on to the next one, but I feel compelled to tell you we're at time.
Really? Oh, my God. Is there a motion to extend for, let's say, 15 minutes?
I would make that motion.
Okay.
Not like throw things at me.
Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, we'll go for 15 more minutes. Okay, let me get this back in front of me. Okay, next item. Use the least expensive grade of paper, e.g. newsprint, for the voter guide.
Bonnie, just that.
Go ahead.
I'm all for it. I just wonder two things. Don't we usually use a union bug on anything that we print, and don't we usually try to use recycled paper?
I know the answer to the first point is yes, we do use a union bug, but how would that impede
using newsprint? I don't know. You know, I just wanted to make sure that we're not heading somewhere where we're setting ourselves up to not be using a union somehow, and I don't know the ins and outs of paper and printing.
Right.
So, but I'm pretty sure that we usually try to print on recycled, don't we? And I don't know if that's the cheap.
Yeah, I don't believe, I have never heard that before, but perhaps, does anyone know the answer on the recycled issue?
I've never heard the word come up, but I also know that recycled paper is more expensive than regular.
This is Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
You know, this is another thing that's in the RFP, so...
What does it say?
If we're going to have the vendor do it, it's kind of irrelevant, unless we want to mandate that they use the union printer or recycled paper.
Well,
wrote
I think
this up before we did the RFP.
Right. I mean, I think this, you know, we can decide if we would like certain mandates to be included. So let's discuss the merits of them right now. What do we think about mandating? There's three different issues. There's a union printer, there's recycled paper, and then there's newsprint. Now, newsprint is simply a matter of them saving money. So I guess what we could say to them is, you know, if their proposal includes, you know, it'll cost us whatever, you know, $10,000 to print the candidate booklets, we could fire back to them. Now, we'd have to do some research before we fired back to them and say, no. If you go to newsprint, you can do it for $7,000. So it wouldn't necessarily be a mandate by us. It would just be that, you know, we're only going to allocate $7,000 for this purpose. So, you know, however you want to spend it, I don't know. What do other people think?
Anthony?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Remember, this list was the collection of ideas. I don't know that they should be converted into mandates. In this case, I think this is almost could sort of be implemented by the absence of a mandate, because if we tell the vendors no, you don't have to use high quality paper. You can use, you know, after maybe they show us some samples and say this one will cost X, this one will cost Y. Then we tell them, yeah, you use the least expensive grade that you know, meets, you know, our minimum requirements.
Okay. Who else wants to speak on this?
Bill.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a problem mandating recycled paper, but one problem with, I know at least here in Houston, there aren't very many union printers at all, and the ones that are big ones. So if we mandate that, we basically rule out all small printers. So I don't know what it's like in other cities, but that's kind of the way it is here.
Well, let me just point out that my understanding is that every time this has been done, it's been centralized. You don't have five different print jobs in each of our five signal areas. You have the National Election Supervisor has one printing. I think it's usually been in Berkeley. I could be wrong about that, but I know it's one city, and it's a union shop by Pacifica policy, and I don't see any reason we should deviate from that. Anyone else?
Well, Karen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we might want to deviate because it turns out that that shop has been a little bit expensive.
Can you speak up, please? Your connection's very low.
We might want a comparison shop a bit because I think that shop, as I recall, was a bit expensive. So I don't think we should restrict ourselves to a certain shop at this stage of the game. Perhaps the vendor that we choose will have his own arrangement and save a deal of money if we use that. I think we should leave some of these things open.
Well, let me just clarify. I wasn't suggesting we should go back to the same company we used before. I was simply saying that we should not deviate from what's been a decades-long Pacifica policy, that contracting of major jobs like this should be done to union shops. Not any particular union shop, but some union shop. I mean, that's part of what our principles are all about.
Bonnie, just that.
Yes, Bonnie.
Yeah, Bob, you're absolutely correct, because I know that there have been... we've actually had problems coming up with, you know, anything affordable, but making sure that we really stood by our policy to use a union bug. And in the case of Pacifica, as far as I know, using a union bug has always been really the priority. So I can't, it might be something that we need to alert people to, or at least talk to somebody at Pacifica to see if there is any feeling toward deviating from that, but I think we're going to find that there isn't.
Sophia, Stack?
Yes, Sophia.
I think that, first of all, I think that professionals would in fact have their own arrangements. Ballot printing is an integral part of the process and something that they would be accustomed to dealing with. So I think that unless their price is bloats the bid or is overbearing significantly greater than what we think that we can get it done for or have gotten it done for, I think it needs to be left up to the contractor. They're going to do what is most cost efficient for themselves. And beyond saying that it has to be a union contract, as far as identifying the printer, I think that is overbearing.
Can I clarify, Afia, are you saying that we should not mandate that they use a union shop?
No, I'm saying that should be the only...
Oh, you would support that mandate, but not any other mandates. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. I agree with you on that. Any other thoughts on maintaining the union shop mandate? Okay, well, in that case... is there agreement that we can just add this to our list of kind of follow-up points that we make to the bidders? We had mentioned earlier the point about using the standard rate mailing rather than first class. So can we add this to the list of kind of like I guess you could call it an appendix or whatever, a follow-up statement about the nature of what we're looking for?
What would the statement say, Bob?
It would say that any printing done pursuant to this contract shall be done with a unionized printer.
Yes, I think it's a good idea, and I think it should be incorporated into the next RFP during the next election cycle. So.
Right.
It's known right up front.
But in terms of this cycle, if we're agreeing to this, I think we need to, just as I was saying earlier about the first class, the standard class versus first class, we need to put that out to the vendors right away so that they'll figure that into their calculations. same similarly on this point. So maybe I think then we should adopt it formally tonight and pass it along with as part of what Bonnie's going to forward for PNB Action so that they ratify it as quickly as they can. So I guess I'll propose that as a motion then, that I'm sorry, I'm composing this as I speak, so if if someone can just take notes as I'm talking, that the Elections Committee recommends that a follow-up to the RFP be issued immediately that specifies, A, that standard class mailing be used for the ballots, and B, that that all printing in connection with the election be performed by unionized printers.
How about recycling?
Well, hold on. Let's finish these two, and then we'll take up recycling. Is there any amendments or objections to that language?
Yosh, we're stuck.
Yes, go.
Yes, I would object because, I've already sent out two different RFPs. They're about 1 week. They were separated in time by about a week, and then to send out a second amended RFP, especially right just immediately before the January 31st deadline, if the PNB acts in a timely fashion. And postage, this is a cost which can, if you've got a Excel spreadsheet, just to plug in 8.25 cents times 10,000 or whatever, as opposed to 32 cents or 42 cents, times 10,000. It's a very simple calculation, and I don't think we need to just show the extent of our fumbling around before January the 31st. This can be very easily remedied in our discussions with the respondents.
Bonnie, just that.
Bonnie.
Yeah, I agree, actually, with Yosh. But I think if we just make a point of not forgetting that when we've gone through the proposals and we are then speaking with people, there are going to be things that come up during the time that we're speaking to them that may cause them to modify their bids. And it just seems like if we could remember to tell them that we have a problem if it's not on the union bug, then we'd be covered.
Okay. Given that, can we agree on my proposal as something that we'll use internally by the working group when we're reviewing, when we're in dialogue with the bidders?
One more question, Steve Brown.
Yes. Yes.
Where are we going to draw the line on this unionized request? For example, the firm in charge of the election itself, shouldn't we request they be union? And what about the trucks used to deliver the stuff back and forth? I mean, why focus only on the printer? It just seems to be arbitrary. How did you decide only on printers? What about the RFP company? There
Yosh
are many
stack
areas.
Okay, Yosh.
Yes, I would say that you've got to draw the line at the printing. I mean, sure, it'd be wonderful if you've got a vendor where their shop, all of their labor force, other than management, were unionized. But, it's the mailings and the union bug which goes out to our membership. And you send out a mailing without the union bug, I mean, people are going to be very upset.
So it's a matter
at
of
a minimum,
rather than, it's not principle, it's perception?
At a minimum, the perception, yes. And, to say we shall not touch a vendor unless you are unionized, and then we end up with zero vendors. I mean, I think we're just shooting ourselves in the foot.
Bonnie, just that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's not only perception. I think it's also longstanding Pacifica policy. And I couldn't tell you the history of it, I just know around that we've had problems in the past when we have forgotten or something has been printed by accident by a non-union shop and that we've gone back and had it reprinted by a union shop. So I honestly think that we do have to, as far as the printing goes, abide by it.
I just want to be clear. My question was half rhetorical. I just want to be clear that we're concerned here about perception and not principle, because there are many other areas that we could insist on unionization, but we do not. So I feel just a little uncomfortable. You know, I'm as much in favor of unionization as everyone, but I want to be clear about why we're doing this and not speak in high moral terms when this is really a matter of, well, we don't want our members to see a mailing without the union bug. I can understand that, too.
Okay, well, I want to address this because it's not about perception. I mean, I agree with Yosh as to the real-world reaction if we didn't include the bug, but to me, that's not the reason to do the union print job. It's because this is an industry that for many decades has had a fair degree of unionization. Unfortunately, as Yosh said, you know, non-profit or for-profit service companies like election management companies are one of the many sectors that have never been unionized. So it would just be, you know, ridiculous to say we'll only take a company that's unionized because they don't exist. So where there is a tradition of an industry that has plenty of options to get union labor, we should mandate that that be taken. It's just we have the same policy on hotels for our PNB meetings, that because there is a high degree of unionization, at least in, not in every city, of course, and that's another issue, but in those cities where there are unionized hotels, it's standing policy that we will go to those hotels to respect the struggle of those workers to get decent wages. So, no, it's not 100%, and it's not perfect, and we wish it could be, but we have to, you know, we have to live in the world we live in and do the best we can.
That's a good answer.
Okay, so if we can move off of this then, so these are just going to be two guidelines for our internal process about union printers and for standard class mail. Now, Bill raised the question of recycling. Does anyone want to propose that that be a third criteria that we discuss in the dialogue back and forth with the bidders? Bill, did you want to motivate that?
Well, I'd just like to suggest that we just ask them how much more would it cost to use recycled paper during, you know, for all the mailings. And then we can decide.
Okay.
Or we can just tell them we want, or we should tell them we prefer recycled paper, something like that.
Other opinions?
Yeah. Well, the first is fine. Let's ask for a bid on both, and we'll decide what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay, then without objection, and by the way, who is writing this list of these things we're going to bring up in the discussion?
Yosh is writing the list.
Thank you.
They will be
no, I know you're taking minutes, and I didn't mean to undercut that, but that this needs to go out, you know, in the next week or so, separate from the minutes, so that we have it before us when the first bids come in, if you could, please.
Yes.
Okay, so that'll be a third one that will, not that it's a solid, you know, requirement, but that it's a question that we ask about whether, how much additional it would cost. Usually recycling is more expensive, so we'll just ask them, you know, would that incur an additional cost, and if so, how much? Okay, moving on down.
Sorry.
Yes.
The group may want to continue so we at least finish this item, but we are at time.
Thank you. Okay. What about, I don't know, how's 10 more minutes sound? Is that okay with anyone object to 10 more minutes?
I'm Steve Brown. I've got to go.
Okay, but do you object to the rest of us
continuing? Not at all.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye, Steve. All right, so next is direct voters to an online voter guide, mail out, voter guide only upon request. We've thoroughly discussed this. I really don't think we need to revisit this. We decided that we're not going to take a position on this right now. We're going to you know, leave that to the PNB later. So I would really urge us to move on to the next item, if there's no objection. Okay, the next one says, don't have higher-paid personnel spend time on basic clerical tasks. And the only sub-point there was have temps, rather than the LES or the NES, mail the replacement ballots. Now, of course, this was on the assumption we were going with the old system of hiring individuals rather than a contractor. So obviously, as several people said tonight, once you have a contractor, how they arrange their internal business, their internal hiring is their business. So is there anyone who needs to weigh in on this, or should we move on?
Let's move.
Okay. All right, next item. Reduce the likelihood of lawsuits. Okay, let's see whether
I'll
this
vote for that.
Sense. Yeah. Two sub-points. Employ all-around good election practices, e.g., make sure all qualified voters receive ballots. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. All right, I don't actually know if that adds much beyond the cleaning up of the list that we've already discussed. Oh, now the next one, though, is a very serious matter that we haven't dealt with, and I think we should. Tonight we won't be able to get to it, but let's agree on a process here. It says, prepare written procedures and make sure the NES and LESs follow them. Now, we have sort of batted around the idea in this committee that one of the problems is that there's never been kind of a comprehensive, you know, each election, each NES, each time has set forth a set of procedures, but there's always, you know, problems that are unforeseen from the previous cycle that come up, or because there's been poor reporting, poor carryover from one NES to the next one, you'll have issues that were, you know, very much in dispute about should the rule be this or that, and they weren't even reported. So the new NES started from scratch to make a rule that had already been discussed. So it would be helpful maybe if between now and when the person is hired, or rather the firm is hired, if we could, as a committee, kind of help to aggregate the rules that have been adopted in the past. And you know, I mean, I think we would have to be very careful not to cross the line of setting rules that really are the purview of the NES, but I think there might be some rules that we could agree would be within the purview of this board, with, you know, based on advice from us to write. So what are people's thoughts on that, you know, whether the committee should get involved in kind of presenting a consolidated manual of procedures and rules from building on past experience? Yosh, and who is the other voice?
Bill.
Okay, Yosh, then
go Bill.
All right, Bill, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I do think it's a good idea, and in particular, we need to think through the kind of problems that people objected to, that the NES or the LES did. And some of it was things where they appeared to be making up decisions on the, or making policy on the spur of the moment, and that just sort of invites challenges. So, you know, whether it's the way somebody marks their ballot or write-in ballots or whether somebody's qualified or not, things like that. Maybe make a list of the kind of things we got challenges in the past on and come up with a written policy that in advance, how they should handle those.
Okay, Yosh?
Yes. What I was going to suggest is I do agree with that. I think we should have some sort of a writing, but it shouldn't be a directive. It should be, in the past, we've encountered these problems, and the resolution for these problems were A or B or C, or maybe you would include all three of them. They've been handled either in this fashion or the other fashion, and then simply ask the vendor to provide a written statement of how they would handle the problems as we have enumerated them.
Okay, but let me be clear. Are you talking about something that we would... But that would require having the document you're mentioning in time for choosing the vendor. I don't think that's realistic. this is going to take many weeks of work and thought and discussion. So I was seeing this as a post-vendor, as a post-acceptance process, where we have the vendor in place, and then we present them this document, which I like the way you're formulating. It's not like these are the rules you must follow, but these are some procedures that past supervisors have followed, you know, and these are some problems that have come up and disputes, and, you know, maybe in some cases where we think it's appropriate, we could weigh in and say, we think, you know, an appropriate way to handle this would be X, but, you know, you're the NES, you can decide, something like that.
Correct. I wasn't suggesting that we have it up front the vendors weigh in. It just wanted to, the vendor should get something from this committee for them to mull over, and then they should come back to us and say, well, we've looked at your list of problems, and this is the way we're going to handle those problems if they occur, and then just have it publicized so that it's public knowledge.
But you're talking about after they're selected, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, now that sounds like a good process. So what we need are a couple of volunteers to start writing that list of, I would recommend it be both problems, but also rules that have already been generated. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe we should leave some of this to them. If we just present them the core documents and maybe make them, you know, as part of their task to cull through them and try to, maybe one of their earliest tasks would be to come up with a consolidated list of rules or, you know, rules that they suggest and then run it past us. We could give them feedback on it. But the point is there's some sifting and gathering that our committee should do to start the process. So is there anyone who would volunteer? Bill, it sounds like you have some handle on some of the problems that have come up. Would you be willing to work on this?
Yeah, I'd be glad to work on it, but I'd like to get input from each station because different ones may have other different problems they've seen.
Sure. Well, would you draw up a kind of like a form email that could be sent to all the stations to solicit that? Okay.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying to send it out yet. I'm just saying draw it up and bring it back to the next committee meeting and we'll review it. But in the meantime, you know, there are things that we all would agree on that have been contentious or difficult or caused problems. So if you could start just working on a list just of what are those problem areas. Is that okay, Bill?
Yeah.
And
good.
By our next, could you try to have a draft by our next meeting on whatever we just agreed? I think it was February
4th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Terrific. Is there anyone who would like to help Bill construct that problem list? Okay, well, if the spirit moves you, feel free to contact Bill and give him a hand, you know, or just send him a few suggestions. It doesn't mean you have to spend hours on the phone. You could just, you know, send an email with these five issues that I think are really important. Please include them on your list type of thing.
Yeah. I'm sure when I send something, you'll think of other things. I'll try to get it well in advance of the next meeting.
Very good. Yeah, and you can go back if you've saved your archive of postings from this committee this year. Have you, Bill?
Yeah.
Because I've sent out several lists like that a few times this year.
Right.
So some of that work has been done already. All right. I think we're about to adjourn. So are there any other urgent things people want to mention before we end? Oh, actually, let me just, we only had one item left on the list, and I know we're certainly not going to agree on it, but I just want to put it on everyone's radar screen to think about for the next call, and then we can at least say we went through the whole list on this call. And that is reduce the frequency of elections, have 4-year terms instead of 3-year terms for LSB members so that elections take place every second year, not 2 years out of 3, which would require a bylaws amendment that was voted on by the entire membership, not just by the PNB and the Delegate Assembly. So obviously that's controversial. I'm not suggesting we discuss it tonight, but I just wanted to draw it to your attention, and then let's plan to talk about it more at the next meeting. All right? Any other than that topic, are there any other last comments? Okay, hearing none, then is there any objection to adjourning?
None.
Okay, meeting's adjourned. We'll see you on February 4th. Thanks, everyone.
Right. Good night.
Good night, all.